the internet cannot run on a single computer. Like we're never going to be able to accommodate not only the demand for block space, but also the heterogeneous requirements for things like decentralization and latency and execution environments. Like we can't encompass all of those in a single chain.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Zero X Research. March is just around the corner, and I wanted to make sure to give you a quick reminder to not top tick your prices of your DAS London tickets. If you use codes 0X10 at checkout, you can lock in a 10% discount on your ticket. Don't miss out on your chance to get ahead of the curve. I'll see you in London.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Zero X Research. We have an awesome interview lined up today with Brendan Farmer, the co-founder of Polygon, which is exploring the frontiers of ZK innovation and helping to scale Ethereum. Today is Tuesday, February 6th. And as a reminder, before we jump into the episode, you can use code 0xresearch10 at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. But anyways, Brendan, let's jump right into this. You dropped a blog post yesterday, actually, and we can link to that in the show notes, but you basically made two really big claims. You said that no L1 or L2 can scale throughput equivalent to that of the internet, and that scaling blockchains is actually scaling access to liquidity in shared state. Found that super interesting. So I just want to peel back a couple layers because there's a lot to unpack there. Can you just dive into that thesis if you would?
Yeah, sure. So I think to me, these claims are kind of self-evident, but I think that they kind of are at the heart of the scaling debates that we're having now, which are between sort of the monolithic and the modular approaches. And so obviously the monolithic approach says, we just need to build more scalable chains, and we can have a single state machine that can sort of scale to accommodate all of the demand for crypto and for block space. The modular approach says, we shouldn't have a single chain. We should instead have different layers that sort of compose with one another, and we can effectively have like a multi-chain ecosystem at the execution layer level, where we can accommodate demand for block space by essentially creating more chains, and as the demand for block space grows, then we can add more chains to sort of cover that. And so the claims that I made in my post were kind of against both of these views. So against the monolithic approach, I basically argued that the internet cannot run on a single computer. Like we're never going to be able to accommodate not only the demand for block space, but also the heterogeneous requirements for things like decentralization and latency and execution environments. Like we can't encompass all of those in a single chain. And so then on the modular side, like if you think about what we're really trying to do when we talk about scaling in crypto, it's like scaling access to liquidity and to shared state. So if we just add like a bunch of chains and none of them have any liquidity, then we're not really like accomplishing what we set out to accomplish. In some sense, we already have like there are a lot of empty blocks that already exist on a lot of dead chains, and we still have this scalability problem that we're facing. And so basically this is all to lay out like a third approach, which is the aggregated approach, which is like we need to figure out a way to scale access to shared state and liquidity in a multi-chain ecosystem.
That's a great summation of your thesis, essentially. I appreciate that, and it's good context for the listener. But can you dive into a little bit deeper into the aggregation layer, or the ag layer, as you guys call it for short, and I guess how that architecture fixes some of those problems you just described?
Yeah, sure. So if you think about like where we're at now in the Ethereum ecosystem, we have a lot of rollups. So we have optimistic rollups like Arbitrum and Optimism. We have ZK rollups like Polygon ZKVM, like Starknet, like ZK Sync. And if you think about what it would take, so to back up, right now liquidity is fragmented across all of these different chains. It's difficult to access state that's on one chain and not another. And so if you think about like what it would take for users to trustlessly bridge state or value or assets between rollups, like what does that look like? So if I have chain A and chain B and they're both rollups that settle to Ethereum, Like, what does it take for me to send a message from chain A to chain B and to do so in a trustless manner? So it requires chain B to wait for some sort of proof from chain A, whether like an optimistic proof, which is basically just waiting for the duration of the fraud proof dispute period, or a ZK proof. And so I need that. And so from that perspective, like, we already can't accommodate optimistic rollups in this model because users can't wait for 7 days to receive like a trustless cross-chain message. And so, but even with ZK rollups, there's this issue where like proof generation takes, you know, right now it's 2 to 3 minutes. In the future, it might be like 15 to 30 seconds. And so you have to generate a proof and then you have to wait for that proof to be accepted and finalized on Ethereum before chain B can accept that message from chain A. And so the design goal of the AG layer is we need a way to do this in a way that preserves trustlessness, but operates at like much, much lower latency. And so you can think of the AG layer as like a decentralized service that is run by stake nodes, and it's in charge of accepting like state updates and proofs from ZKL2s in the Polygon ecosystem, and ensuring that those state updates that are sort of the result of cross-chain transactions are consistent and can be settled to Ethereum in a way that's safe. And so we do this with proof aggregation, and you know, we can dive into exactly how that works.
Yeah, I think the idea of the aggregation there is very interesting because I've always felt that shared state has been like, it's one of the biggest unlocks of crypto and like blockchain over a siloed state, which is kind of what you see a lot of in like Web2 and big tech companies. And obviously one component of the aggregation layer is the Polygon CDK. Could you mind talking a little bit about how Polygon CDK fits into the broader vision of the aggregation layer?
Yeah, sure. So the Polygon CDK is the Polygon Chain Development Kit. And it's just a way for anyone to spin up new chains. So basically to add block space in the Polygon ecosystem. And the CDK basically admits a lot of choice and flexibility. So you could run a chain that uses a type 1 prover or a type 2 prover. You could, right now it only supports ZK VMs, but in the future it will support alternate VMs like Maiden or, you know, other things that we're working on. And so the idea is like, you basically give anyone the ability to launch a chain in this ecosystem that has full sovereignty and full choice. And it exists alone, but through the aggregation layer, it's able to interoperate with other chains in the Polygon ecosystem at super low latency. And so it can access this pool of shared liquidity and shared state. And so you can think of like the Polygon CDK chains as like these sort of this like space of Polygon block space, and the AG layer is the thing that stitches them together into you know, a unified environment for liquidity and state that feels like using a single chain.
I wanted to follow up there. I'm going slightly off the book here, but I think there's like, if you think about it, right, like you can have like quote unquote an infinite amount of like Polygon CDK chains, or I guess like other rollups that lie under the aggregation layer. Is there some point at which like too much is too much for this aggregation layer, or is it like quote unquote actually infinite block space? I hate to use the word infinite, but
yeah, I sort of cringe a little bit inside anytime that we use like infinite scalability or infinite block space. I think we have a similar reaction there. But I do think that the aggregation layer has some properties that make it really, really scalable. So you can sort of think of the aggregation layer as just accepting these like chain states and proofs. And that process, like for one, it only requires a causal ordering. Like we don't need to agree on like a canonical total ordering of all of these messages that the AG layer is receiving. The acceptance and processing of proofs and the aggregation of proofs is fully parallelizable and can be done by just a single node. Because what you're doing is you're doing some cryptographic work. You're taking some proofs from a bunch of different chains and you're combining them into a single chain. But at the end of that process, or you're combining them into a single proof, but at the end of that process, like what you're left with is basically a certificate, which is a proof that shows that you behaved honestly. And so it kind of like has different properties from what we've seen in the past, like sharding schemes and sort of mechanisms that rely on crypto economic security. And so I do think that there's we need to build it and we need to figure out where the bottlenecks are in practice. But I think that there is reason to be optimistic that like this would scale largely with like the total compute available in the system to generate aggregated proofs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Another thing that when you mentioned scaling and the whole concept of aggregation there is, what type of novel use cases or unique applications do you think the aggregation there will enable? I think one idea is like a distributed AMM. It's something that I've been like really excited about, but no one's really like built it because it kind of partially seemed like the tech wasn't there. But when the aggregation there came along, I'm like, wait, this is kind of like built for distributed AMM. So we'd love to hear like what you're looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think distributed AMMs are an amazing use case. And I think just being able to trustlessly permit use cases like Uniswap V4 and like different ways to route liquidity through an ecosystem at super low latency, low cost, I think that that's just a really interesting use case. I do think like, in some sense, the way that I view it is less like enabling novel use cases and just like enabling kind of like a bigger like combinatorial explosion of existing use cases. And I think it's just really powerful to be able to like be an app developer and have complete control over your chain. So your execution environment, your sequencer, and you're able to like completely control and customize the experience that you're offering to users. But at the same time, you can take advantage of shared liquidity and shared state that already exists in the ecosystem. And so you don't need to bootstrap liquidity for a marketplace for the NFTs that you're issuing. You can just issue those NFTs. And so I think that we will see novel use cases emerge. But I think that there's like, for me, a lot of reason to be really excited just in like enabling that simple interaction.
In terms of synchronous and asynchronous, I guess, interoperability or composability, whatever you want to call it, what are the primary trade-offs between the two? Like, what are the differences, I guess, not trade-offs? And like, in the blog post that you wrote last night or dropped last night, you mentioned that you might have to have like whitelisted almost clusters of chains that like purposefully support each other in order to get that atomic composability. Can you kind of dive into just the two different architectures and I guess out of the box for the aggregation layer, like what will be supported?
Yeah, sure. So the ag layer will support basically two modes of interaction, the asynchronous direction where you're depending on some other chain that's sending you a message if you're a chain. And then the second mode is, which will come at some point in the future, is the ability to accept atomic bundles of transactions. So this is like the synchronous mode, where you have transactions that are executing at the same time across a bunch of different chains. Either all of those transactions execute successfully or none of them are included on any chain. And so I think that there are challenges with the second approach. You basically need to coordinate like execution across all of these chains. And like before you generate a proof, if you want super low latency, you need to be able to guarantee that like state on chain A is locked until sort of chain D is able to determine whether it can successfully execute this transaction. And so I think that that's like that sort of involves a little bit more complexity. But the way that I see it is the ag layer is sort of just concerned with providing safety. So it can ensure that there's no way for a chain to include an atomic bundle when like the other transactions in that bundle aren't executed successfully. And so the other half of that picture is like, how do we actually execute those transactions? How do we guarantee liveness for all the chains involved? And I think that what the ag layer enables is for like novel and emergent coordination infrastructure to basically arise on top of the ag layer. So this could be things like shared validity sequencing, or it could be things like relays that fundamentally like find the best solution for coordinating chains to basically ensure synchronous composability and execution. And so I think that's sort of the way that we see it. You can do a lot with asynchronous cross-chain interoperability, and that's where we'll start. But I'm excited to see like, you know, different projects and like different infrastructure providers in the space basically figure out the optimal solutions for both asynchronous and synchronous composability.
Okay, that's really helpful. And then on the asynchronous front, so basically taking a step back, actually, you've got the unified bridge contract on Ethereum, you've got the aggregation layer, and then you've got all the Polygon CDK chains on top. So everyone is going to at least be using Ethereum for settlement. But what happens in like this modular world where, you know, obviously we're seeing a new Celestia chain every single day, or and soon to be EigenDA and probably Avail. So what kind of trust assumptions do you introduce when you have alternative DA layers, but then you also have, you know, chains that still rely on Ethereum for DA? Like, do you lose anything there?
No. So the way that we've designed the system is so security is localized. And so there are basically like two things that can happen. Like you can have a data availability withholding attack that can be launched on a specific chain. And we can't prevent this unless every chain is using Ethereum for data availability. But I think it's reasonable to make trade-offs for users to prioritize cost over full Ethereum security for data availability. And so the design goal for us is just ensuring that if some Validium chain or some chain that uses Celestia for data availability is attacked, that won't affect any other chains in the ecosystem. And so like, if you think about how the ag layer works, like each chain is basically providing the like minimal amount of data that it needs to guarantee that like a data withholding attack on one chain can't affect the continued operation of another chain. But the second issue that that also comes up is like you said, we have a unified bridge. And so all L1 assets for all chains are deposited into a single contract. And this is really, really good because it allows us to have fungibility of these assets across different chains. So I can take L1 ETH and I can send it from like the ZKVM, the Polygon ZKVM to the OKX chain, to the POS chain. I don't have to deal with like a wrapped synthetic version of that token where I have to find liquidity to swap into the native version. But the problem is that we don't want, like we want to offer full freedom and sovereignty to all chains in the ecosystem. And so they should be able to pick their own execution environment. But like, let's say that someone chooses an execution environment and develops a zero knowledge prover for it. And that prover is not sound. Like we can't have a situation where an unsound prover on some random chain can drain the entire bridge of all funds deposited in the entire ecosystem. Like that would be an absolute disaster. And so part of what the ag layer does is it ensures that like chain, like cross-chain transfers of L1 and L2 issued assets are conserved between chains. So you could have a situation where some random chain deploys an unsound prover and is exploited, but an attacker can only drain up to the amount of tokens that are locked or deposited in that chain. And so this is like a really, really important point that like we want to provide fungibility and a good user experience, but it can't come at the expense of safety.
What's up, everyone? March is approaching fast, and I want to give you another reminder not to miss out on DAS London. It is coming. It's right around the corner, and it's in March from the 18th to the 20th. We have 3 full days of content. This is your chance to bump shoulders with some of the world's top executives and have open dialogue with both attendees and speakers. We're going to be focusing on a range of topics that I'll let Ren discuss for you.
First on the list, we have Bitcoin Catalyst, the halving and spot ETF. Next, we have a view from the buy side from investors on things like strategy, portfolio allocation, and more.
far.
We also have a topic on RWA's tokenization and stablecoins, which I think we can all agree are going to play a large role in crypto's future. We'll also talk about global regulatory frameworks like compliance best practices and the evolution of global standards that are shaping the global investment landscape. We'll also have someone from the institutional front to talk about infrastructure such as banking and payments with financial giants like Visa and JP Morgan. And last on the list, the macro case for digital assets. So don't miss out on this monumental event. Seats are limited, so be sure to register today by hitting the link in the description and using the promo code 0x10 to save 10% on tickets. See you in London. You mentioned sort of like this scenario where there's a faulty prover, right? And I know in your blog post that you released last night, you talked about this kind of fundamental trade-off between interoperability and liveness. Is there a scenario where, for example, if chain ABCD have agreed to be interoperable with each other through like whatever means, like relays running like full nodes for each other's chains, that and the end state of the aggregation there when we reach sort of like the atomic bundles, that a chain could quote unquote like DDoS other chains or even the entire like aggregation there by submitting like incorrect or like not valid messages or transactions on their like on this malicious chain? Is that like a possibility? And would you mind diving into the trade-offs?
That's a great question. So the post sort of goes into like the different trade-offs and kind of this tension between like liveness and low latency interoperability. And so what I would say is like first, chains have no requirement in Polygon to even use the ACK layer. They can submit batches directly to Ethereum. They can completely ignore the ACK layer entirely. This would be a pretty bad thing for them because they would have to pay the verification cost for their proofs themselves versus having it amortized across the entire Polygon ecosystem. But from there, there are also like different liveness trade-offs that they can make within the ACK layer. So like the issue with liveness is basically a chain decides to accept a bundle or like depend on an external chain state, and that chain state either is invalid or the chain doesn't submit a proof. And so there are different like mitigation mechanisms and different trade-offs the chains can make. So like chain B that's depending on chain A could only accept a chain state from chain A with a proof, or it could only accept a chain state from chain A if it's running a full node for chain A and it knows that it's valid, and like worst case chain B could create the proof. Like sort of proceeding further down those trade-offs, like chain B could only accept a chain state from chain A if like a crypto economically secured relay attests that the state that it received from chain A is valid, and so worst case the relay could provide a proof to the interop layer. And sort of the like most I guess like risky trade-off would be that chain B accepts a chain state from chain A just without any guarantees. This is like the trust me bro approach, and so in that case, if chain A is submitting an invalid chain state, then chain B would need to its block or wouldn't be finalized in the ACK layer, and it would need to go back and remove the transactions that depend on chain A and then submit a new block. And so this is like, I would say not the end of the world. This fault would be detected within, you know, a 30-second to a minute window. But there would be a rework. But I think that it's really important to note that this should be an extremely rare occurrence because it requires the chain A itself to be misbehaving. And so this can't be caused by some user. It can't be like a random attacker can't make this happen. It's fundamentally the fault of the chain that provides an invalid chain state. And so, like you said, like there are a lot of penalties that can be applied to that chain. Like if it's crypto economically secured, then there could be slashing. It could be kicked out of the ACK layer. It could be blacklisted. And so I think that fundamentally, like for us, the design goal is to like admit as many choices and options for chains to be able to pick the trade-offs that make sense for them between liveness guarantees and low latency.
I wanted to follow up on something you say there. You say like that a chain could be kicked out of the ag layer. My understanding was that the aggregation layer was kind of like something permissionless. Is there a scenario where, like, for example, DAO governance can like completely ban this chain from ever being interoperable as part of the aggregation layer? Or like, how does that work?
Yeah, so I think TBD, whether we want to like make that a governance decision and sort of maintain a blacklist of chains or deregistered chains. You know, worst case, you could have this situation where like validators would opt to ignore batch updates that are submitted to the ag layer from that chain just voluntarily. I think that what you would more likely see is other chains gossiping about a chain that had equivocated or that had provided an invalid state, and they would just opt not to interoperate with that chain. But it would be primarily like a voluntary move on the part of chains.
It sounds to me like obviously ZK proofs are going to be like the secret sauce to all of this. So where are we at there? Like how, you know, where were we 2 years ago and where are we today? I know you guys have some pretty exciting stuff that you've been working on, so I'd love to get more takes on that.
Yeah, so you know, 2 years ago, I started a company or a project with Daniel Lubrov, and we were acquired by Polygon as part of their big push into ZK tech and sort of transitioning from being a sidechain to really building in the L2 ecosystem. And I think that people maybe still aren't aware that like Polygon has really led the industry in the development of performant zero knowledge proof systems. And so 2 years ago, we released Plonky 2 and Starkey. And Starkey is still the most performant proof system that's available to people. And so I think in the interim, we've sort of been quietly working on two things. So the first is Plonky 3, which is the follow-up to Plonky 2 and Starkey. And we call it Plonky 3, but that's sort of it's like sort of a misnomer because it's not really related to Plonk at all. It's a Stark library that supports a variety of different fields and different variants on proving systems. And we've seen already like a really, really amazing performance improvement in Plonky 3. And we expect over the next few months to be sharing like some pretty mind-blowing results. And then the second thing that we've been working on is like a follow-up to the ZKVM prover. And so this is kind of a more performant next-gen version of the prover, and it has like a pretty special feature, which is that it supports a type 1 mode. And so we're kind of borrowing the Vitalik's framework for like classifying provers, where you have type 4, which like can't generate proofs for anything EVM related, and then it kind of goes to type 2, where you can support existing Ethereum contracts and tooling but not existing chains. And so type 1 is kind of like the highest level of compatibility with Ethereum, and it allows you to generate proofs for any existing EVM chain. And so we've built that, and it's actually really, really performant. So we have been generating proofs for existing real Ethereum L1 blocks, and we're seeing average proving cost across like a huge variety of transactions as between 0.2 and 0.3 of a cent. And actually, in the next few weeks, we're going to be reducing this by 35%. So it will be like between 0.1 and 0.2 of a cent. And so this is like a really huge breakthrough, I think, for the Ethereum community, because it allows us to like conceive of a future in which Ethereum itself is proven with zero knowledge proofs. So you could like browse to a website, and that website could be using some or accessing some state on Ethereum. And it could be effectively like running a full node in the browser, because it's able to instantly verify every transaction that's ever happened on Ethereum with a tiny zero knowledge proof. And so that's like kind of a mind-blowing future when you think about like crypto kind of like infiltrating into different areas of our life. And The second thing is, it like for Polygon, there are a lot of EVM chains that were either launched as like alt L1s or side chains, like the Polygon POS chain is a good example, or even optimistic rollups. And having a type one prover allows us to instantly and seamlessly onboard those chains into our ecosystem and into the ag layer. And they can immediately become ZKL2s. They don't have to do anything. There's no migration. We just start generating proofs and they immediately get the security guarantees of a ZKL2. And so I think that that's just like kind of a paradigm shift for how we think about scaling and like how we think about the maturity of ZK tech.
That's highly compelling, that last part. Peeling back an extra layer there. Is this going to be like an open source thing? Like, why wouldn't the Optimism superchain just take this and apply it to their own superchain?
So that's a good question. So the first point is, yes, it's released under an MIT Apache 2 license. And so it's completely open source and free for anyone to use. My response to this, your second question, why wouldn't Optimism just take this and use it for their superchain? I think like the way that we see the world is that all of this proving tech and sort of execution environment stuff will become commoditized. So it's all free and open source software. Like there's no long-term moat that exists and no network effects that exist from developing kind of execution environment or proving tech. But there are long-term durable benefits and network effects that accrue around the ag layer. And so I sort of get frustrated when I hear from optimistic teams, we're using the best tech for now, and pretty soon when ZK tech is ready, we're just going to switch to ZK tech. And the problem with that view is like, you're not building the right thing. The thing that you should be building is the ag layer, because fundamentally the ag layer allows for like a unified experience across all of these chains, and network effects will accrue to the ag layer. Like liquidity will exist in the Polygon ecosystem. And any chain that brings economic value to that ecosystem, there will be a positive sum interaction there. Because like if you bring a chain that mints a bunch of high value NFTs or creates economic value via a game, like you will be able to plug into existing liquidity in the Polygon ecosystem. And vice versa, like the Polygon ecosystem will be able to interact with your assets and your users. And so like fundamentally the ag layer is what we should be building. And you know, I hope that OP does build on our proving tech and join the ag layer. I think that would be a good positive something for everyone involved.
You mentioned something about sort of like value accrue, right? And in terms of the modular blockchain thesis, which I think we're seeing is slowly starting to play out, you know, people have often thought about the different layers: execution, consensus, settlement, data availability. And I think a lot of people have been trying to answer the question, where does like value accrue in terms of like the token for each of these like layers of the stack? Do you foresee, and I think so far, like most of that premium has gone to the settlement layer. Do you foresee a world in which like the aggregation layer becomes like an additional layer of like the modular blockchain stack, and that actually becoming the value accrual layer or like the dominant area of value accrual?
Yeah, I think, you know, to give our perspective, we are less concerned with like where like value accrual at this stage of development. I think right now every project in this space should be concerned with finding product market fit and like getting people to use their ecosystem. And so thinking about like where we can extract rent or where we can sort of like divert value from users to our token is not like, I think it's a completely fair question and it's like a good question to be asking, but it's not something that we feel like we have to completely answer now. So with that being said, I do think that there is room for value accrual at the ag layer. The way that we think about it is, if we grow the Polygon ecosystem, Polygon is going to be operating some public chains in that ecosystem. And so like any sort of positive sum or like growing the pie mechanism is good for Polygon. Like it's much better than if we tried to have an ecosystem where we run all the chains and we sort of like, you know, are trying to extract as much value as possible. There's also, I think, a lot of room elsewhere in that stack, like by running coordination mechanisms, by running sort of shared validity sequencers that enable atomic transactions and synchronous composability. I think those are areas where there's the possibility to, like, for value to accrue in a way that's not kind of rent seeking or extractive. I'm not sure that the ag layer will become like the point of value, like value accrual or sort of value extraction. I think the settlement layer will still sort of dominate, but I think that the ag layer will be a really important point where network effects begin to accrue and where like it becomes really obvious that you should be in the Polygon ecosystem because it's just a no-brainer. You get to preserve sovereignty and freedom for your chain, but you get to plug into shared liquidity and shared state and offer a better experience to your users.
Makes a lot of sense to me too, growing the pie over just trying to extract value. I see the logic there, but I do want to ask, why do you think the ZK EVMs on mainnet today have failed to see significant traction when compared to Arbitrum and Optimism? Do you think it's incentives? Do you think it's maybe you just didn't have that 10x cost reduction, which maybe now you do with the sub-cent cost for transactions? But yeah, I would just love to get your take there.
Yeah, so I think it's a lot of things. So I think the biggest culprit is that Arbitrum and OP had a really long head start. And so they've been able to like build a market position that I think is difficult to displace. And like the market right now, it's sort of like a down cycle. I don't think it's demanding super, super high throughput and scalability. I think it's demanding like good execution and access to liquidity and incentives for a small group of users. And so I think that's part of it. I do think that there's also a lack of understanding that of like the true costs of an optimistic rollup. So we're going to be like ready to post on this, but it turns out that optimistic rollups are actually a lot more expensive than ZK rollups if you look at the actual costs that are borne by users. And so if you look like we measure kind of capital inefficiency as like sort of correlated to as directly correlated to the fees that users pay to third-party bridges to exit the chain. Because basically, optimistic rollups like impose this cost on users where if they want to exit via the native bridge, they need to lock their funds for 7 days. And so users that don't want to do that are forced to pay fees to third-party bridges. And so if you look at the aggregate fees that have been paid by users, say, on Arbitrum, they're like tens of millions of dollars. And if you compare that to the cost of ZK proving every single Arbitrum transaction in history, that's like less than $1 million. And so I think that there's this huge cost discrepancy that's not really being felt by users because a lot of the usage is incentivized and there are airdrops and sort of there are all these like distorting forces that are affecting behavior. But I think if you actually pull back and see like what the structural advantages of ZK rollups versus optimistic rollups are, there's a really, really clear argument that ZK rollups are superior. And like we just feel that the tech is here and this year we'll actually see some shifts in user behavior.
I think one of the points you made in your blog post last night was that this aggregation layer differs from a shared sequencer. And you know, shared sequencers, especially for optimistic rollups, introduce, for example, like additional latency, additional trust assumptions. And I think my question here was that the aggregation layer unifies liquidity and shared state across all of the different chains, right? And I can understand how it removes the need for a shared sequencers in order to provide the same like trust assumptions for like atomic interoperability or like asynchronous or like synchronous composability. But what would a shared sequencer on the aggregation layer look like? Because I think maybe not now, but eventually people will start picking up on, for example, like cross-chain MEV. And even with the aggregation layer, like perhaps like searchers or some other entity would want some concept of ordering transactions across like these different rollups. So yeah, could you run through like what that potentially would look like?
Yeah, sure. So I think to hit on your first point first, it's like a real real structural disadvantage for optimistic rollups to have to rely on like a shared validity sequencer, or, you know, the requirement to run a full node for every chain that you know, the chain that you're sequencing is interacting with. Like, that's a real barrier and a real bottleneck for scalability. And so I think, like, structurally, in my view is that this will prevent optimistic ecosystems from actually scaling, because we know that, like, if you have to run a full node for, you know, 10,000 or a million chains, that's just not a practical, like, we're sort of back at the monolithic view of the world. And so to get to your question, like, would there ever be a shared sequencer that runs on top of the aggregation layer that basically handles MEV and like, or at least like redistributes MEV? I think that there could be, but I think it's important to note that, like, the main benefit of the ag layer is that it doesn't impose like a coordination mechanism on every chain. And so you could have chains where there is a lot of cross-chain MEV, like let's say you have a DeFi chain and then you have a bunch of validiums that are batching transactions to be executed on that DeFi chain. There will be a ton of cross-chain MEV that might be extracted in this setup. But I think that while you could imagine having a shared sequencer for, in that case, for that cluster of chains, you wouldn't need to have that same infrastructure, like managing coordination between those chains and like some random gaming chain, or there are cases where you don't need synchronous composability between sets of chains. And so fundamentally, like, a huge advantage of the ag layer is that it doesn't impose a single coordination mechanism for every single chain in the ecosystem. Chains can organically decide like how they want to coordinate with one another, and can kind of pick the optimal trade-off for their use case and you know, their users' needs.
From the user experience perspective, in the end state of this, like, do you envision like one wallet and you're just doing all these different activities using different chains and you really don't even notice? Is that kind of like what you envision?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's kind of the holy grail. I do think it's like easy, like we're building infrastructure at Polygon, right? And so it's easy for us to say like, yeah, we have this amazing infrastructure design and it provides safety and, you know, we can have these coordination mechanisms. But like, in order for this to work, we really need a lot of help and investment on the wallet side. And so I think like, but it, to your point, that's exactly the end state that we need. And there's a lot of work that's required on the UI UX front to actually get there.
So what do you expect for the aggregation layer in V1 that's launching, I believe, sometime this month, and then as well as for V2 and timeline on that?
Yeah, so for V1 is really, it's sort of less the aggregation layer and more the unified bridge. So it's what we call the LXOY bridge. And so you'll be able to have fungibility across chains, but you won't have this super fast low latency interoperability at first. And so that's what we want to provide in V2, is the ability to do proof aggregation and the ability to allow chains to safely interoperate, even at lower latency than Ethereum or than proof generation. So V2 is like, you know, we might not get there immediately at V2, but like, it will be about accelerating or, you know, lowering latency from a couple minutes to, you know, less than 30 seconds, less than 10 seconds. Eventually we should be able to get to, you know, 1 to 2 seconds or even below.
And then Polygon proof of stake, I know this probably isn't, you know, maybe what you work on the most considering you're previously at Mirror, but I guess, when is that slated to kind of become a Polygon CDK chain that's actually ZK based?
Yeah. So our proving system optimizations have worked, like a big motivation for doing those has been to allow for the POS chain to seamlessly upgrade to a ZKL2. I will say I don't work on this team, which I think is a good thing for me, but it's really complicated to think about like migrating the bridge of the POS chain to basically convert over to the LXOY bridge. And I know that the team that's working on this has a really good and safe plan to kind of manage risk and handle this migration in a secure way. But I think that that's going to be like the major source of complexity in the upgrade, because it's a chain that's running and has a ton of activity. And, you know, we just have to be really careful in how we manage that upgrade.
I had a question about sort of coordination infrastructure, right? Going back to the point that we had on this fundamental trade-off between latency and liveness, I think a few questions there. The first being, what do you think the ideal coordination infrastructure looks like? Is it like a relay that every Polygon CDK chain like opts into that's crypto economically secured by like the POL token? Or what do you foresee like the end state of the coordination infrastructure looking like? Are there like maybe like two big like groups of chains, like everyone's just using the same thing? Or is there like 10 different groups depending on whether like you're like a gaming group, like a high latency, a low latency DeFi group? What do you foresee that end state looking like?
The future will be heterogeneous. So you will have different chains that have wildly different requirements for liveness and low latency and synchrony. And they will take different approaches to coordination. But I do wonder if the dominant coordination mechanism looks like a relay, or it looks like sort of like builders. So basically like super nodes that create like bundles and you know, propose blocks to a bunch of different chains at the same time, enable synchrony in that way, or whether it will be like a true shared validity sequencer where you just have the same entity or, you know, decentralized mechanism that's sequencing a bunch of chains. I think that there's like a lot of room and opportunity for people to build this infrastructure. And I think that like the design space is very open. And so I'm more just excited to see which direction it goes and what people decide to build.
I had a follow-up question on that. I think when the POL token announcement first came out, there was this idea of sort of this, I'm going to butcher the term, but like multi-utility token, like you can like restake it to do like different things like sequencing, proving. Where do you think the POL, the token itself, fits into like this whole like aggregation layer, if it has a role to play?
Yeah, so the way that we see it is that stakers will stake the POL token to participate in the ag layer, and so to be able to accept batches and proofs from chains and then aggregate those proofs. I think that you could definitely imagine scenarios in which, you know, restaked pol is also used to crypto economically secure relays and different infrastructure. I think that's a very plausible view of the future. You can imagine a situation in which like restaked ETH is also used to secure the ag layer. And I just think that there's a lot of freedom to experiment with different designs, and but you know, I think pol will be really core to the ecosystem and to the design, but it's not going to infringe on individual chain sovereignty. So chains are free to use whatever gas token they want, whatever staking token they want. They can sequence however they want, and so there's no like there's no penalty that Polygon is extracting from chains. I know that for Optimism and for Arbitrum, there are like revenue sharing requirements, and like there's an extractive mechanism for them to redistribute sequencer fees back to Arbitrum and back to Optimism. And we just don't think that that's a long-term viable model. And so for us, it's much more important to focus on purely win-win, positive sum relationships with chains.
It feels to me like a big piece of the puzzle is going to be really just garnering developer mindshare and getting some of this stuff built and establishing those network effects that you just, you know, talked about a little bit earlier. So what's the game plan there? Just build the best developer tooling you possibly can and provide support? Or is there like going to be an incentives program of some sorts for them? Like, just any light you can share on that strategy would be cool.
Yeah. So all the above. I think that, the nice thing about Polygon is that we now have a really, really good technical team and like a foundation to build like really innovative and kind of best in class products. And so that's combined with like a lot of strength, obviously, in BD. And so there are a lot of chains that have already agreed and committed to sign on to the ag layer or to join the ag layer. And they're going to be bringing like a ton of capital and TVL and resources. And so I think the idea is that, you know, there will be incentives and there will be, you know, BD mechanisms that kind of bootstrap this ecosystem. But once the ecosystem gets to like reaches escape velocity in terms of the available liquidity and the interesting apps and developers that are building, I think that then it becomes a lot easier and it becomes sort of a no-brainer, because if I'm a chain, like I'm not giving up anything by joining the ag layer. There's no penalty, there's no like restrictions or requirements that are imposed on me. I just get to access shared liquidity and shared state. And so we think that that's like a really easy sell for chain developers.
Awesome. Well said. Well, Ren, do you have any more questions or is this a good spot to wrap it?
I think this is a perfect spot to wrap it.
Awesome. Brendan, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to bring you back here in like a couple months after the ag layer actually launches and we can get some updates from you. But seriously, thanks for taking an hour out of your day, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Really appreciated it.
This was a great conversation. Really looking forward to the future of the aggregation there and really like how seamless the user experience is going to be. And I think it's going to be a big unlock as crypto's still scratching their heads over what interoperability, especially for Ethereum, is looking like right now.
Thank you. I'm excited for the future, and it'll be great.
Do you have any last things you want to tell the listeners? You know, maybe where they can follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, sure. I'm @_bfarmer. I also have a Mirror blog that I'm going to be publishing more posts on. And then you can always check out the Polygon blog. You can always reach out to anyone from Polygon. We'd be happy to chat with you. But yeah, stay tuned for the launch of the ag layer, for more announcements and innovative product launches coming soon. So yeah, we're excited.
Awesome. Sounds good. I recommend everyone check out Brennan's replies, by the way. There's a bunch of gold in there. Some good conversations and threads. But all right, we'll talk to you later, Brennan. Take it easy.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for watching today's ZeroX Research episode. I wanted to take a second and remind you about our upcoming 2024 Digital Asset Summit in London this March. Seats are limited, so hit the link in the description and use the promo code 0x10 to save 10% on tickets. See you in London.